This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, big elections in Tanzania and Ivory Coast. A new U.S. House Speaker expected this week. Human teeth could learn some lessons from fish.
Our approach is to find things that are hard to study otherwise and target them in these animals. So in this case, Lake Malawi cichlid fishes and many other fishes regenerate their dentition throughout their entire life.
We'll rock the Casbah, in the movies, that is. These stories are more just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. Tanzanians turned out in large number for a general election Sunday to elect a new president and parliament. Some are looking for the change promised by the opposition Chadema Party, while others are pleased with the work that ruling party CCM is doing. VOA's Jill Craig reports from Dar es Salaam.
The normally busy streets of Dar es Salaam were noticeably quiet Sunday, as traffic was sparse for Tanzania's much-anticipated election day. Voters turned up at various polling stations around town, starting even before 7 a.m. when the polls opened, to vote in presidential, parliamentary, and local elections.
But so far, the election is going well, and everything is well right now.
Voter Calista Nkone has been waiting more than 2.5 hours for her turn to vote in Mbweuni. But she says that things have been well organized.
For this station, I see it's good. People are going well in their lines. We are waiting for the name so as we can be called and get in for voting.
And back at Msasani, voter Sagana Disanis agrees that so far, so good.
Yeah, of course, the voting is going very well, perfectly. As you can see, people actually are here just trying to elect their presidents and some of their leaders and local leaders. It's perfect well, and security is quite awesome.
Election registering officer in Kinondoni, Flora Mazengo, says this highlights a more important point for Tanzania.
This is a free and fair election. Democracy is, is improving in our country.
There have been some reports of skirmishes at polling stations over a lack of or incorrect ballot papers. Jill Craig, VOA News, Dar es Salaam.
The National Electoral Commission of Tanzania says it expects to announce the winner of the presidential vote within 3 days. It was also election day in Ivory Coast. At stake, the presidency, with incumbent Alassane Ouattara in a strong position to keep his job for a second term. The election is crucial for the country after the post-election violence of 2010. I spoke with correspondent Emily Yob in Abidjan about the vote.
The incumbent president, Alassane Ouattara, is running for a second term in office. He is facing six contestants in the presidential elections, but he's still a very big favorite to win the elections. He is quite popular in the country, and he faces very divided oppositions. So in terms of suspense, he doesn't only want to win, he wants to win on the first round. That's what he aims for.
You say divided opposition. Is there enough of that opposition to beat him?
That is the big question, but three candidates already pulled out of the race. So that's why also Ouattara believes that winning on the first round is even more possible for him, because the rest of the candidates are not big enough, at least that's what most observers believe, to beat him, really. The historical opposition figure was Laurent Gbagbo, the former president. He is not there anymore. He is in jail awaiting trial at the ICC. And his party, the one he co-founded, is very divided, with people wanting to boycott the elections and others still presenting a candidate. So there is nobody really in the opposition against Ouattara.
Are there any reports of trouble in the voting?
Today, there is no really major incident. The only thing that people noticed was that the polling station opened with a delay because they were just not prepared and there were a bit of a miscommunication. But overall, there was no major incident. People were able to vote and everything is okay.
When are the final results due?
They have 5 days. The Electoral Commission has 5 days to release the results, but they've already said that they plan to release them, they hope to release them within the next 48 hours.
In a grander scheme of things, is there any historical perspective to this particular election?
There is indeed. It's actually a very crucial election for the country because 5 years ago, during the previous presidential elections, post-election violence left 3,000 people dead. It was when both candidates, Ouattara and Laurent Gbagbo, were both claiming victory. So the hope now is that the elections are going to be peaceful and that the country can move on and leave all this civil war past behind.
Emily Yaub in Abidjan. A month-long leadership vacuum in the U.S. House of Representatives is expected to end this week. It's been the focus of much interest both inside and outside of Congress. VOA's Michael Bowman talked with me about the big doings coming up on Capitol Hill.
It would seem that the grand drama and suspense that we've been witnessing for about the last month or so as to who will lead one half of Congress, the House of Representatives, is going to be resolved. It would seem that Wisconsin Republican Paul Ryan, who is very well known, he was Mitt Romney's running mate in 2012. He has been the chairman of the House Budget Committee. He has been a real proponent of conservative fiscal matters for a very long time. It appears that he reluctantly is agreeing to the speakership when the party basically told him that it was him or no one, that they weren't confident that anyone but him could be elected to the job.
How did the hardcore conservatives come around to going for him?
Well, it remains to be seen. There's going to be an election within the caucus. There's going to be a selection process within the Republican caucus on Wednesday, and then it will go to a full vote in the House on Thursday. There are some ultra-conservative members of the House, the real Tea Party members. They are called the Freedom Caucus. And even though they have given him a preliminary endorsement, it is not clear how many of their members will actually vote for him. In point of fact, they are almost irrelevant as far as being elected speaker, because if you get most of the other Republicans and most of the Democrats to go along and vote, he will in fact be elected speaker. The question is whether he can govern as Speaker of the House, whether he can lead his caucus, whether he can instill any greater unity as far as actually getting things done than the outgoing speaker, John Boehner, did. John Boehner was at loggerheads with the conservative factions of his party on many different occasions. And I don't want to say that it drove him out of the speakership, but at a certain point, it became clear that he didn't have the heart anymore and he just didn't want to fight them.
Well, what do the Democrats think of Paul Ryan in this position?
Obviously, they agree with him on almost every issue of substance. There's almost no position that Paul Ryan has taken that would, on almost any issue, whether fiscal or social or anything else, where Democrats would say, oh, boy, that's a great position. However, he is, for the Democrats, the devil they know. He is an element that they are comfortable with. Even though they don't agree with him, they believe that the duties of leadership will force him to make some deals, to get some things done. And they are very much hoping that the brinksmanship that we've seen will be lessened to a certain degree under a Speaker Ryan. It simply remains to be seen whether that will be the case.
Are there any vibes in the halls of Congress under the dome as far as the presidential contests going on?
There always are. Particularly, I mean, I'm the Senate correspondent, and so I peer across the way to the House and keep tabs on things. But there are a number of senators who are running for president, Republican senators. We have to remember that even though a future Speaker Ryan will be able to bring any bill that he wants to onto the floor for a vote, once it goes over to the Senate, any senator can object to bringing a bill up, and then it requires 60 out of 100 senators to vote to proceed on that bill. We have the debt ceiling coming up. We have questions about how the government is going to be funded coming up in December. There are some real thorny issues that Congress is going to have to wrestle with, and I don't see any way that presidential politics won't intrude in some form or fashion.
VOA's Michael Bowman. As the flow of Syrians, Afghans, and others through the Balkans toward Western Europe continues, European leaders are considering sending 400 border guards and setting up new checkpoints if the EU's frontier states drop their policy of giving arrivals passage to other countries. A gathering of Central and Eastern European leaders Sunday in Brussels was sought by German Chancellor Angela Merkel, who is voicing concern for migrants as winter sets in. The United States plans to admit 10,000 Syrian refugees. What happens to them, if and when they arrive, could be difficult. One refugee group says more needs to be done to help refugees resettle to prevent further suffering and future social problems. Elizabeth Lee has details.
Many Cambodian refugees settled in Long Beach, California, 35 years ago.
So I was told that freedom and opportunity was the key in coming here. But certainly what we weren't prepared of is the language gap.
Sarah Polim did not speak English when she arrived in the United States at age 14. The horror of watching her three brothers die in the Khmer Rouge genocide still fresh in her mind.
The last one that died in his sleep with me on the ground was the memorable moment how he was trying to survive, right? Trying to see if I hold on to life a little longer, maybe there's some grand, you know, freedom.
Many of the refugees did see freedom in Long Beach, but with its own challenges. Cambodian community activist Chan Hopson lists some of them.
Nobody think about or pay attention to our mental health at all. They give us the help with the basic necessary to survive physically. But emotionally, psychologically, and mentally, we did not have that.
Many of the adult genocide survivors suffered post-traumatic stress disorder. Many women had lost their husbands and sons in Cambodia. Many of their children had to care and fend for themselves.
Now we're seeing a transmission of trauma to second and third generation.
Even till now, they have chronic illness or some physical disability because of it. And I think those are the reasons why we're still struggling and we're still trying to survive. People can't get jobs because of those things.
Sophia Chum works with youth who share her background, American-born children of Cambodian refugees. Higher education is often unattainable because poverty plagues the Cambodian-American community. Alicia Sim says poverty caused her brother to steal a car and get deported.
He started by stealing food, but then it got bigger. He started stealing car parts just to have a car for us to take us to places.
There's actually not a lot of support services, health services, academic services that actually help the refugees who first come to this country in order for them to be able to take care of themselves and their families.
Some of the refugees formed their own groups to help fill the need. Chan Hopson co-founded the Khmer Parent Association with her husband to help Cambodian families navigate the U.S. education system. She says the past failures in the resettlement process don't have to be repeated if more help is provided for new refugees.
Emotionally, psychologically, mentally, physically, socially.
Allowing the next wave of refugees to heal and be better prepared for a new life in the U.S. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Long Beach.
Still to come, we'll take you to the Kasbah. This is VOA's International Edition. Turning now to what's buzzing on social media, International Edition's G. Abby Lee is here to bring us up to date. Hello, G.
Hi, Ray.
Gee, what is the trending hashtag going on today?
It's all about sports and music, but for this segment, let's just focus on the MTV EMA. That's the American Cable Network's Europe Music Awards.
What's the best account to follow to keep posted on this grandiose, dubious, exciting ceremony?
I'll say the awards' own Twitter account, at MTV EMA. Obviously, Sunday was an important day, so it's been actively promoting its other social media accounts through Twitter. For example, it's sharing the Periscope links and also telling followers to download the MTV EMA app for exclusive footage of the event. Now, for those of our listeners who are not familiar with Periscope, it's a live video streaming app acquired by Twitter earlier this year.
Oh, and I'd like to add that it's one of the newer social media apps. So how does this EMA event work with it?
Basically, the viewers decide which performer wins by casting votes, and then the MTV Networks Europe awards prizes to the performers. This year's MC is British singer Ed Sheeran. He's on Twitter at Ed Sheeran and tweeted this Saturday. In Milan, hosting the MTV EMAs tomorrow, but until then, it's pasta time. That tweet has been retweeted more than 12,000 times and marked as a favorite nearly 23,000 times.
Well, that's a whole lot of shares for just one simple tweet.
Well, I thought that as well, but until I scroll down to see more tweets from him. Here's a tweet from earlier this month. He tweeted, "Cheeseburgers, man." And that was marked as a favorite more than 30,000 times. So either people around the globe really love cheeseburgers or his social media clout is just that strong.
They do say cheese is as addictive as drugs.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us about one more musician at the event worth following.
Australian entertainer Ruby Rose is also one of the trending hashtags. She tweeted this earlier Sunday. It's EMA day, 7 a.m. 3 hours of sleep and there's no turning back now. That's been marked as a favorite nearly 1,800 times. Ray, I thought having two openly homosexual celebrities as trending hashtags on Twitter shows just how receptive the younger population is compared to older generation when it comes to diversity. Back to you.
Thanks, G. You can follow her on Twitter at G Abby Lee. That's JEEABBEYLEE. And also by following us at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This is VOA's International Edition. If you're a digital game player, this could be an eye-opener. While competitive online gaming is still male-dominated, women are making serious advances in the sport. VOA's Michael Sullivan explains.
These women love computer games, and they found some competition at an Intel Developers Conference in San Francisco.
We've come so far with gaming and women in its in female scene, and it's growing bigger and bigger each day.
Diane Tran of Houston, Texas, is part of a team of women gamers called CLG Red. They play online from different cities and have traveled internationally to win world championships. Team leader Stephanie Harvey of Montreal says gaming is like any sport.
I practice, I have a team, I have coaches, I have a staff, I have sponsors, I have leagues, I have like official matches, I have tournaments, I have fans, just like a pro sport.
The team plays a combat game called Counter-Strike and has thousands of fans who watch on the website Twitch and see recaps on YouTube. Despite sexism in digital gaming, women hold their own in this male-dominated sport, says a game researcher at the University of Southern California.
And so when they hit a moment where there's discrimination, somebody says something about them or about women, they know how to stick up for themselves in that environment.
Benita Novshadian studies computer technology at a college in California when she's not gaming.
Well, right now I'm majoring in information systems, which is basically IT, and I really hope to stick within the gaming industry, and maybe my degree can obviously back that up.
In the meantime, she and her teammates are enjoying online fame and the fun of professional gaming. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Here's one you can sink your teeth into, provided you still have your teeth. By age 65, 30% of all people worldwide have lost all their teeth. Most bony fish, on the other hand, can regrow their lost teeth. Even though you're not a bony fish listening to me right now, I guess. Scientists are wondering if their ability could somehow translate into human tooth regeneration. Here's VOA's Roseanne Skirbel.
Cichlids are popular tropical fish that biology professor Todd Streelman studies at the Georgia Institute of Technology in Atlanta.
Our approach is to find things that are hard to study otherwise and then target them in these animals. So in this case, Lake Malawi cichlid fishes and many other fishes regenerate their dentition throughout their entire life.
So much so that a mouthful of teeth is replaced every 50 days. In a new study published in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, Streelman and his team take a closer look at embryonic cyclic cell tissue that develops into either teeth or taste buds.
And what we found was some really interesting commonalities between teeth and taste buds in their earliest development.
Last year, the same researchers sequenced the cichlid genome. This year, they crossed closely related cichlids and then compared genetic differences among the second-generation hybrids. They found what appeared to be genetic switches that would shift the embryonic cells to become either tooth or taste bud.
We could identify this because the genes that are typically positive markers of taste buds and the genes that are typically positive markers of teeth were co-expressed. They were expressed in the same places. So we basically could watch the path through development where this epithelium at one point was bipotent and then became either teeth or taste buds.
Teeth and taste buds begin in the same kind of tissue in the developing jaws of fish in their earliest stages. The scientists mapped the regions specific to each. Researchers went on to manipulate the undifferentiated tissue in fish to boost tooth development over taste buds at an early stage when the fish had eyes and a brain but were still growing jaws. It turns out that cichlids aren't the only animals that express these genes. Steelman says collaborators at King's College London demonstrated that a few poorly studied genes in mice were also involved in the development of teeth and taste buds. Roseanne Skirbel, VOA News, Washington.
A down-on-his-luck rock music manager finds himself stranded in Afghanistan. But there he discovers a young woman who could change his whole life. International Edition's David Byrd tells us about Rock the Casbah, which stars comedian Bill Murray, Kate Hudson, and Bruce Willis.
Richie Lanz has seen better days during his career in rock and roll. Lanz, played by comedic veteran Bill Murray, takes his last client and assistant Ronnie, played by Zooey Deschanel, to Afghanistan to perform for the troops there.
You will play in front of 2,000 horny soldiers.
I'm gonna hurl. Oh, my God.
I'm sorry, but I can't tell if you're vomiting or laughing.
When Richie finds himself dumped and stranded in Kabul, he discovers Salima Khan, a Pashtun girl with a beautiful voice who wants to be the first woman to compete in Afghanistan's version of American Idol. At the film's premiere in New York, Bill Murray said that he felt this movie was something special, even as they filmed it.
I haven't felt this way in a long time, that something unusual was happening, that we were really jumping over what was written and what was expected, making something much better than what we walked into at 6 o'clock in the morning and walking out of the every day going, I don't know. It started with, hey, you know, this might be good. Hey, you know what? This could be really good. And then it was, I think we really got something. I think that's what we have.
As Murray's character navigates Afghanistan, the film also gives audiences a look at some of the consequences of the war there.
What the hell am I doing here?
Richie Lanz, talent manager. How y'all doing, guys?
Assalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
Back at you, babe.
Bill Murray says that the film used comedy as a way of getting into the deeper subjects, and it was a challenge to maintain the comedic element when dealing with more serious subject matter.
So that's something that we thought we could get away with, and not get away with, but succeed at. And then the idea of making the story right was going to be determined by the people about whom we were speaking, people from both Afghanistan and the Muslim world. And those people seem to think that not only is it very successful on a human level, that it's respectful, but that it's entertaining, too.
Rock the Casbah director Barry Levinson says that he prefers to use comedy to address tough subjects because that is what real life is like.
I think that sometimes, you know, behavior and real kind of humanistic behavior has a tendency to have humor mixed in with its more dramatic moments, as opposed to saying, well, this is supposed to be dramatic and therefore it's important, or this is a full-out comedy, that the blending of it, it tells you more about human behavior, for me personally.
Actress Leem Lubani, best known for her Oscar-nominated role in 2014's Omar, plays Salima, who dreams of singing on television. She says that the film ultimately is about shared humanity.
Well, for me, I think, although it's like a comedy, but it basically shows two human beings from a completely different, you know, world come together, put hand in hand, and help each other achieve what they want, which is, you know, I think it's such a humanistic story in a way that I think Barry was pretty genius to do that.
Rock the Casbah is rated R for language, including sexual references, some drug use, and brief violence. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
That'll do it for this edition of International Edition. More news and information is at your fingertips when you visit our website, voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States remains concerned about the arrest of Venezuelan opposition leader Manuel Rosales. Mr. Rosales was detained by authorities October 15th when he returned to Venezuela after 6 years in self-imposed exile. A judge has reportedly ordered that Mr. Morales remain in jail until a verdict is reached in a trial scheduled to start November 12th. Mr. Rosales ran against former President Hugo Chavez in the 2006 presidential election. He left the country amid allegations of corruption, which he claims were politically motivated. Mr. Rosales returned to Venezuela to be present for the country's December 6th parliamentary elections. The arrest of Mr. Rosales follows the detention of several opposition leaders and reinforces a pattern of criminalizing political dissent by the Venezuelan government. Among those politicians jailed is Leopoldo Lopez, who was sentenced in September to nearly 14 years in prison on charges of having incited people to violence using subliminal messages. The case was called a travesty of justice by Human Rights Watch, which said the Venezuelan prosecution never presented basic evidence of a crime. Speaking to the press about Mr. Rosales' arrest, U.S. State Department Deputy Spokesperson Mark Toner called on the Venezuelan government to respect due process for Rosales and all others imprisoned on politically motivated charges. The Venezuelan government has an obligation, he said, to respect the human rights and fundamental freedoms guaranteed by international law. Deputy Spokesperson Toner noted that as a longtime party to the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, Venezuela is required to promptly inform all persons detained of the reasons and any charges against them, and to promptly bring anyone detained on criminal charges before a judge, and to either release them or guarantee them a fair and public trial before an independent and impartial tribunal. Consistent with the values and the spirit of the Inter-American Democratic Charter, we call upon the government of Venezuela to provide Rosales and others in political opposition with the legal protections and due process to which they are entitled.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.